On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Thorn in the Side Thursday, right here on America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. I am Bob Kincaid. Accept no substitutes. With half a right-winger strangled under my bed. No, sorry. Getting ahead of myself. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and, you know, I've been, the closer we get to Christmas, the bigger the frenzy gets. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, well, they are part of the season, aren't they? Along with Saturn and Odin, and a couple of trees, and Ishtar's probably in there somewhere. It's the solstice. Everybody comes out for the solstice, right? It's not the solstice yet, but we're in the warm up. But I mean, if you want to know how bad it is, it's gotten so bad that the fundies are so desperate for targets that now they're attacking Steve Jobs. You know, not for walking around with some 12-year-old's liver in his body or anything, you know, that actually counts. No, they're mad at Steve Jobs because the iTunes store pulled an app that promoted the Manhattan Declaration. This filthy anti-abortion piece of garbage. Remind me later, and I'll get Agnes to come in here and read the latest piece of anti-abortion garbage to show up on a phone via a text message in this house. Oh, you're going to love that. But the right wing is in such a frenzy, I began to get nervous. I began to realize that I am very, very bad about holidays. I figure you guys know how to celebrate a holiday all by yourselves, being grown-up, decent, upstanding, righteous Democrats, progressives, liberals, you know, decent human beings as opposed to teabaggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, Republicans, and booger eaters. Right? I mean, right. So I figure I don't necessarily have to play a bunch of Christmas music for you to recognize that it's Christmas season. But then I got to thinking. And you know, the last thing I need at Christmas is to be attacked by the American Family Association for not playing my recommended daily allowance of Christmas music on this here radio program. So I figured we probably ought to play some Christmas music just to get it out of the way. Let's see what we got here. Let's try this.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, 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 too.
Nah, it's been done. Okay, let's try, let's see. Let's have a look here and see what happens. Here we are. All right, this ought to work. Dang, that's pretty.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
No, that's too easy. That just brings on a parody. Maybe I ought to get wing nuts roasting on an open fire. Yeah. Limbaugh snapping at your heels. Hey, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. That wasn't much either. How about something, I don't know, kind of hip, kind of electronical and stuff. How's about, something with some real sort of modern syntho-poppy kind of, yeah, let's try this. Nah, that's not the same ever since that guy lit up his house to it and it went all over the YouTube and Budweiser bought it for a commercial. It just doesn't work for me anymore. No, you know what? I've got a better idea altogether. You know what? I got to thinking last night after sharing that story with you about the Mandarin Oriental Hotel and how the Israelis, what was the quote? Don't want no face-to-face with no Muslims. And I can't explain the creative process to you, but it just, boom, it fell in my lap, a lyric. And being the Christmas season, it had a Christmas lyric, too. So, with a Christmas lyric, to a Christmas, yeah, you know what? The horn does its best work when the horn does its own work. So, dedicated to Ehud Barak and all his pals who stayed at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Washington, D.C., but didn't want to see any Muslims around them, we've got a little Christmas carol. Like I said, the lyric just dropped in my lap. I shot it off to John Fox, and John Fox did the magic that John Fox does. And magic it is indeed. So, a modern Christmas tale for us all. Stay away from the Israelis by the horn. I'd like to thank you very much, and I hope we passed the audition. Nah, John Fox did an amazing job with that. Stay away from the Israelis. A Christmas carol to everyone from the horn. And by the way, if you want to hear it again and again and again and again, you are free to go over to headonradionetwork.com. In the rotator there, you will see a story called Uncommon Humanity. And at that link, just clicky, you can hit it and have the song for yourself. And share it, send the link around, do a little let's do a little horn viralness to sort of combat this racist, bigoted viciousness. I mean, can you imagine working people? And see, that's how I am. I don't see black people. I don't see white people. I don't see Muslim people, Jewish people, Christian people. I see working people. There's two kinds of people in the world. Them that work and them that don't. We do, they don't. Working people got done out of a day or two or three's wages because they got taken off the schedule because Ehud Barak couldn't bear to be in the proximity of a dirty Muslim. I ask you a question. I mentioned the story the other night about the guy in Wisconsin. He's opening up a strip joint. I forget exactly where in Wisconsin. But he's opening up a strip joint, and he says that the minute he opens his strip joint, it will have a sign saying, "No Negroes allowed." What's the difference between Ehud Barak and the Israelis' policy of no Muslims and that bigoted, filthy, disgusting racist in Wisconsin and his little sign? Save for the fact that maybe, just maybe, we might actually use the laws of the United States to make sure that he either takes down the sign and admits everybody or doesn't do business. What's the difference? Like I said, feel free to tweet it. Feel free to Facebook it. Feel free to just spread it around because, yeah, on the one hand, it would be nice to share out this little bit of horn creativity. But far more important is that we shine a light on the enduring bigotry and racism of the Israeli regime. I mean, does Ehud Barak visit Japan and say no Shinto? If he visits India, does he, no Hindus? No, but I'll bet you if he visits in India, it's damn sure no Muslims. You gotta wonder if the Indian government would put up with that. Yeah, the racist in Wisconsin, he's in Abbotsford, smack dab in the middle of the most rural part of the state. Long drive. Well, I guess there won't be no high-speed rail train to Abbotsford. Jeebus. So, our little Christmas card. Share it around. I'll be happy if you... Well, the link is there. And just right now, I am... posting the linky. No, that's not that. Let's try this again. Posting the linky to the song right in the chat room. I am the single most multitasking talk radio host in the country, and I prove it every time I do something like that. But it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I think that's an appropriate thorn to start out in the side. What else is there? Oh, there's an abundance. Sometimes I think it's Moran Monday all week long. You know, what do I mean? I could go all day. You know, the president had a press sort of an announcement talking about the national intelligence estimate about Afghanistan earlier today.
I followed it on MSNBC and just saw some... It's tough when you see a guy who's supposedly, well, not supposedly, I mean, the guy's an Ivy Leaguer. He's a legal scholar. He went to Harvard and was a professor at the University of Chicago. And he says things like, we've got problems in Afghanistan, but I think we can still fulfill our mission there. Nobody says that kind of crap who has any sort of a working knowledge of the history of the region. You just don't say it, because when you say it, it becomes abundantly clear that you're talking through your hat. Nonetheless, they did. And so I stayed with MSNBC and watched the coverage for a little while. What else did I see? I saw Andrea Mitchell interviewing a Republican strategist about Barack Obama's poll numbers and talking about what good shape he's in. What? No, really. I heard repeated references to Julian Assange's alleged sex crime. You know what? If I understand correctly, that's a sex crime in one country on the planet. Forgot to wear my condom. I mean, it's probably good policy. Criminal law, not so much. The WikiLeaks thing and the dummied up, ginned up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up allegations against Julian Assange have even gone so far as to make Keith Olbermann shut down his Twitter account because he was attacked for not taking the forgot to wear my condom allegations seriously enough. How do you take that seriously? And I mean, it was a full onslaught against Olbermann. Which when I saw that made me think of something that I saw over at Alternet earlier today. Headline. Are right-wing libertarian internet trolls getting paid to dumb down online conversations? Anybody who's ever tried to run a message board that allowed right-wingers on knows this to be the case. It's a fascinating article with a good bit of solid information. The article is by George Monbiot. Why couldn't he be named Smith? No, he does good work. And he notes that more and more corporations are literally paying people to anonymously and quietly go in and shill for corporate positions. As someone who has worked in the struggle against mountaintop removal, I can tell you this is a fact, because any time that there are some facts about mountaintop removal put out, you can bet there will always be one or two people at least jump in and start talking the party line in behalf of the sleaze merchants like Massey. There's one paragraph... He explains, George Monbiot does, that the weapon used by both state and corporate players is a technique known as astroturfing. Astroturf can mimic spontaneous grassroots mobilizations, yada, yada, yada. And he notes that it's really prevalent inside the environmental struggles, the environmental arguments. And then he cites some direct evidence that I thought was quite fascinating. Message boards, chat rooms, and listservs are a great way to anonymously monitor what is being said. Once you're plugged into this world, it is possible to make postings to these outlets that present your position as an uninvolved third party. Fascinating statement, huh? Guess where it came from? It came from an article on the website owned by the Bivings Group, a PR company specializing in internet lobbying for corporations. The Bivings site, Monbiot notes, also quoted a senior executive from the biotech corporation Monsanto thanking the PR firm for its outstanding work. You know, when Monsanto thanks you for your outstanding work, you're pretty much guaranteed that whatever your work that was that Monsanto deemed was outstanding was pretty godforsaken sleazy. But there it is. They're actually paying people now to toxify discussions on the internet. He notes, articles about the environment, as noted, are hit harder by such tactics than any other. I love debate, and I often wade into the threads beneath my columns. But it's a depressing experience, as instead of contesting the issues I raise, many of those who disagree bombard me with infantile abuse or just keep repeating a fiction however often you discredit it. This ensures that an intelligent discussion is almost impossible, which appears to be the point. If you have ever wondered why I early on developed, as soon as I got off of terrestrial radio, early on developed the policy, which I adhere to this day, that right-wingers are not only not encouraged to call the program, but not allowed. And that the minute I find out someone is a right-winger, they're done. If you ever wondered why that is, there's your answer. Whenever right-wingers are involved in a conversation, and I understand there are hosts out there that love having right-wingers call in because it makes for some really exciting, fun radio. That's a definition of fun that I don't get. Arguing with idiots. Arguing with the drunk at the end of the bar. If you've ever tried to do it, you realize that it's not very fun for very long. Because, after all, that's the drunk at the end of the bar. Common sense, any sense, is not going to be their long suit. And so, wing nuts are not allowed on this program at all. Ever. Because, as the article quotes, this ensures that an intelligent discussion is almost impossible. Whenever there is a wingnut involved in any discussion, there will be no substantive anything involved. It'll be nothing but it'll be nothing but the Monty Python argument sketch. The second pattern, he notes, is the strong association between this tactic and a certain set of views, pro-corporate, anti-tax, anti-regulation. Both traditional conservatives and traditional progressives tend to be more willing to discuss an issue than these right-wing libertarians, many of whom seek instead to shut down debate. And of course we ask ourselves, well, why would they want to shut down debate? Well, the answer is actually fairly simple. They want to shut down debate because they cannot win the debate. The only time that you have to suppress speech is when you cannot counter that speech. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Well, yes, it does. And so it comes as no surprise to me that when he tweeted up in defense of Julian Assange, that Olbermann was viciously and unwarrantedly attacked. It is no surprise at all. Meanwhile, not under attack, the filth merchant, Flush Flimball. Yesterday on his program, well, I know you hate to hear it, but you're going to anyway. And let me explain why. Again, I don't have any problem filling up 3 hours of programming. I can actually filibuster 3 hours of programming without a problem. My throat gets a little, Sergeant Carter, I can't sing, by the end of it. But I don't have any problem. So this is not mere filler. If I take any role upon myself in the course of this program, I can assure you that one of them is not to tell you in which direction to go. Not to tell you, you must do this if you're a liberal. Because that kind of crap doesn't work with liberals or progressives or toad lickers or whatever we call ourselves. It doesn't work. But the one thing I can do is share information and material with you in the hopes that you will sort of internalize it to the extent that you will see how the right wing operates, so that you can, in the course of any given day, identify it when you see it and hear it wherever you see it or hear it. And you won't just see it or hear it coming out of Flimball, but the stuff, the crap, the filth, the garbage that he spews into the public airwaves every day will be parroted by so many little shoulder parrots around the country. So the latest attack from Flush Flimball, if you please.
These people are true believers. That's really what you're saying. They're true believers. And these people, you know, we have people who are concerned about the country. Pelosi and Reid couldn't care a whit about the country. Do you really want somebody like that? They don't care about, they care about themselves and their own power, and the country be damned. And that's one of the problems that we have in coming up with counterweights to them. Some people say you need fire to fight fire. They don't care a whit about the country. They care about their party, and they care about their power, and they care about their buddies and all, but they don't care about... The Constitution's an obstacle to them. They don't want any part of it. So it's like, do we want an Al Capone? Well, oh, do we want an Al Capone? Some people might say, yeah. Right now we take an Al Capone. That's what we're up against. You know, do we want an Al Capone?
Rush. I'd take an Al Capone if he was standing behind your big old punkin' head with a baseball bat, but never mind.
But, you know, pick your favorite gangster. I mean, that's what we're really up. We're up against the mafia here.
You got that? Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. Nancy Pelosi, to whom Flush Flimball owes the continued unincarcerated existence of people like Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, George Bush, Dick Cheney and George Bush in particular. Because it was Nancy Pelosi who said, when she had a strong enough majority to impeach the bastards, she said, impeachment is off the table. And that fat, gaseous giant doesn't have enough aplomb to be grateful to her for saving that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout's miserable neck. But she did. As sure as God made little green apples, she did.
We're up against a mob didn't care about ethics. They don't care about... We got a bunch of J.R. Ewings over here. Once you get past the ethics, the rest is easy. Now, we don't have people like that. There's no question. I know some people.
Yeah, you don't have people like that. You don't have a corrupt as the day is long incoming Speaker of the House who was caught on film, tape, video, whatever, literally walking around the well of the House of Representatives, passing out bribe checks on the floor from Big Tobacco. No, you don't have any of that, Flush. And you were never caught doctor shopping, and you were never caught taking an illegal prescription for Viagra for an all-boys weekend, and I do mean all boys, some of them little boys, in the Dominican Republic. None of that ever happened, Flush, right?
Say that we need one. We don't want people...
Oh, I know what you need, Flush. It's measured in grains and goes right behind the ear.
We're going to put party before principle or country before principle, but that's what we're up against. And the question is, yeah, how do you stop people like that? And I don't even know that the objective on our part is to stop them. And it could well be...
You know what? The objective isn't to stop them. They are about to engage in the biggest right-wing giveaway of funds that this country has seen since George Bush's, the early days of George Bush's presidency in 2002. They really, really are. They really, really are. The House vote on the big giveaway was delayed today because they couldn't quite come up with they couldn't quite come up with the numbers to just vote the giveaway on through. Because there was a handful of actual Democrats who rebelled. The way it was set up via procedure that would have allowed one amendment, a single amendment, that would have repealed or modified the estate tax provisions in the giveaway. And if the measure passed, the bill would go straight to the Senate, meaning that every Democrat who voted for the amendment would therefore have been deemed to have voted for the entire bill. If it then failed, and that was the likely outcome, the House would have voted on the underlying Senate bill immediately. This didn't sit well with Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon, who noted earlier in the day and was quickly denied that he had been told that not getting this bill could mean the end of the Obama presidency. One has to simply ask the question, what kind of a presidency is it when its success or failure is determined based upon the administration's ability to get through an $801 billion giveaway, mostly for the very richest of the rich in this country? DeFazio went on and said that, he said, we're looking for a broader alternative than just a vote on the estate tax. So it looks like something something along those lines is going to happen. Now here's an interesting amendment offered by Anthony Weiner, and one that I could get behind. The amendment offered by Anthony Weiner extends the Bush tax cuts only for Americans making less than $1 million. It raises the estate tax. It replaces the 2% payroll tax cut, you know, the incremental beginning of the gutting of Social Security, with another tax credit that was in last year's stimulus package. I'm guessing that's the making work pay tax credit. It adds a $250 cost of living adjustment for seniors on Social Security. Needless to say, that amendment has been declared dead on arrival, because it is opposed not only by Republicans in the House, but what are described as dozens of Blue Dog Democrats. I don't think there are enough Blue Dog Democrats left in the House to qualify as dozens. There's not much. What are there, 25, 26, two dozen plus two? But there are enough of them to stymie that little bit of actual populist relief that doesn't give away the farm to the richest people on earth. So there was no movement today. Expect it tomorrow. But nonetheless, Flush Flimball says that, what? Yeah. That Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are just like Al Capone. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing. But nothing, there's really, I don't know, how about you? It's almost as though my ability to be horrified, shocked, or surprised has been permanently damaged. Do you remember, Representative Louis Gohmert, the terror baby specialist? Yeah. Well, he's making another name for himself. He's not just insane about, terror babies. I guess he's worried that they're gay terror babies. You know that the House of Representatives, glory, passed a standalone Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. It was proud. 250 to 175. That's a decent margin. That actually speaks well of this country. It would speak better if it was 275 to 150 or 300 to 125 or 425 to nothing. That's the country you want to live in, the 425 to nothing country. Nonetheless, 15 Republicans voted to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the House, and that is 10 more than voted in support of the National Defense Authorization Act last May. I wonder how many of those are Republicans who are on the way out. Be interesting to know. But of that 175, there were some very vociferous idiots. Duncan Hunter, Republican of California, he said, the military isn't the YMCA. A Republican from Louisiana named John Fleming said that repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell would drop the bomb of social experimentation right on the military. Can't you just imagine him back when Harry Truman integrated the armed forces? It'd drop the bomb of social experimentation right on the military. Oh, but then comes Louis Gohmert. I don't know if Kate's out there, but she might want to be cranking up her earthquake machine. And you know what? Pay attention, gay folks. You've got another weapon in your arsenal, according to Louis Gohmert. You can make entire nations disappear. I wouldn't say it if Louis Gohmert hadn't confirmed it to be true.
We heard the leader talk about how we can work together in this body, even though there are homosexuals in this body. That's right. This isn't the military, and I can promise you, if people did some of the things that have been done by members of this body, they would never have been allowed and would not be allowed to continue serving in the military. We have that margin to work with here. In the military, there is the military mission. There is not that margin to work.
Kind of makes you wonder who he's talking about. Larry Craig, Mark, what's his name? It's funny that the vast majority of them are Republicans. The wide stancers, I think, is what they're called, right?
Work with. We're talking life and death. Now, we've heard, how does it make us safer to lose thousands from the military? And good question, because the hundreds I've heard from that I didn't bring their quotes down here have said, you pass this, and I'll tell you personally, but I will not say it in the presence of my commander. You pass this, I will not reenlist. I won't say it publicly because it'll affect my assignment after that, because we know what this president, this commander-in-chief wants, just as does the Secretary of Defense. The two people that the president appoints said, let's do it, because they know the president appoints it. He's their boss. And then all of those who do not answer directly to the president, they've said this is a terrible idea. You want an accurate poll? Take one where military members can answer privately with no ability of the commanders to figure out who answered where. And
who's to say that that wasn't present in the first poll, the first survey? It's not like they had to sign their names to it. You see how a Republican sets up just a complete lie? So he can, I mean, a check mark for yes, a check mark for no, or maybe a little pencil dot in a little circle for yes and a little pencil dot for no. How's the commanding officer? By God, that, you know, I've always wondered if Private Schmidt Lamp was a little light in the loafers. That's a light in the loafer dot if I have ever seen a light in the loafer dot. Private Schmidlap! Pile! Yeah. But we haven't gotten to the good part yet. Oh, no. We haven't gotten to the good part yet.
Then let's find out how many thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands we can lose with this activity. That's important. Now, we were told Don't Ask, Don't Tell is inconsistent with American values. I would submit the military.
Additional minute.
The military is inconsistent with American values.
Somebody in Louis Gohmert's district, please
take that video and start running it as a campaign ad against him now, because that's going to play real good in Texas. The military is inconsistent with American values. What did he say, Marvelline? I think he said the military is inconsistent with American values. What, is he some kind of communist? I never thought he was before, but I'm beginning to wonder. Jeebus. The military is inconsistent with American values. By the way, all of those little bigoted right-wing members of the military that don't want to serve with no homosexual, give them their walking papers now. You know what? You want to don't ask, don't tell in the American military? Let's apply it to being a right-wing sack of horse crap. Do your job. Shut up. March when you're told to march. Stop marching when you're told to stop marching. Shoot when you're told to shoot. Quit shooting when you're told to quit shooting. And shut the up. I happen to think the American military would be dramatically better without bigots. From General James Amos on down. But we still haven't gotten to the good part.
It does not have freedom of speech. It does not have freedom of assembly. It does not have the freedom to express its love to those in the military the way you can out here.
Wait, what? The military does not have the ability to express its love the way you can out here. Oh, it's moments like that that you kind of wish C-SPAN didn't just have a static camera over there, because it makes it sound like there's probably a couple of little closeted pig lickings just off camera stage left, locked in a torrid embrace, doesn't it? It also sort of echoes back to Dim Leader. Remember when he was on the campaign trail in election 2004 and he said, many of the OBGYNs in this country can't properly express their love for the women of this country. You know, that was about the time that me and Agnes went and found a female OBGYN for her and the girls. No, really. This guy is an absolutely stunning little idiot, isn't he?
Because it's an impediment to the military mission. You can't do that. Can you?
Another moment of Louis Gohmert. Don't know much about history. Never heard about the Spartan army, did you, buddy? Or the Athenian one, but mostly the Spartan one. Where the members of that military were encouraged to form homosexual bonds with one another because it made them fight harder because they loved the guy next to them in line. And they fought like crazy animals. But let's not bother Louis Gohmert with no facts.
Can you imagine military members being able to tell their commander what they think of him using freedom of speech or assembling where they wish? It doesn't work.
And there's nothing about the don't ask, don't tell repeal that says that that's going to happen. Except for the fact that within all of this diatribe from Louis Gohmert, is the inherent assumption that gay people are unable to control not only their sexual urges, but any other urge as well. And following that line of supposed reasoning on down, therein lies the inherent assumption, inference, that, you know, gay people can't control their urges, therefore gay people aren't human. It ain't far from there to the ovens, brothers and sisters, and I'm not a kidding you.
And so this is one of those issues that is so personal to the military. We need to have an accurate poll. And to my friend who said history will judge us poorly, I would submit if you will look.
Here it comes.
Thoroughly at history. And I'm not saying it's cause and effect, but when militaries throughout history of the greatest nations in the world have adopted the policy that fine for homosexuality to be overt, if you can keep it private and control your hormones, fine. If you can't...
There it is. If you can keep it private and control your hormones, fine. Because in the right-wing mind,
homosexuality, and I will be forever indebted to Peter Godbold for making this so clear for me. In the right-wing mind, they cannot contemplate a homosexual relationship without it being strictly hormonal, without it being strictly a matter of nothing but the basest chemical impulses. A right winger cannot admit of the possibility that two people can actually love each other and be of the same gender. You know, real love. Love that lasts a lifetime. Love that blooms in the spring of a life and ends only with the coming of winter and death. The love that abideth until death do us part. A right-winger can't admit of that, because a right-winger is so sick in the head to begin with that they are barely capable of anything resembling love in a heterosexual fashion. God, this is sad. It really is. It's heartbreaking to contemplate what a miserable, loveless insides Louis Gohmert must have. Because all those places that should have love in them are actually filled in with hate. It's sort of like the discovery of all those bodies in Pompeii. You know, the ash fell in Pompeii and killed people in their tracks. And where they fell, they were buried in place, with even the very looks on their faces frozen in time. Over the years, their flesh decayed, but there were pockets remaining that were perfect negative images of who those people were in the moment of their death. And upon discovery, they began pouring plaster of Paris into these pockets, and when they chipped away the ash, lo and behold, there they found not a person, but a horrifying projection of a person. And so it is inside the soul of Louis Gohmert and the other bigots like Joe Manchin of West Virginia. You tap, and you find that hollow place, and you fill it, and instead of finding what you would expect to be there, you see instead a dark and rotten thing comprised entirely of hate. But let's go back and get this all, and I won't interrupt.
In effect, but when militaries throughout history of the greatest nations in the world have adopted the policy that fine for homosexuality to be overt, if you can keep it private and control your hormones, fine. If you can't, that's fine too. They're toward the end of their existence as a great nation. Let's look at this more carefully before we harm our military.
Before we harm our military. You notice how he twists what Don't Ask, Don't Tell's repeal means into his own sick and twisted right-wing version? Don't Ask, Don't Tell is not going to be repealed so that people may simply say, I'm gay and I'm a sergeant, or I'm gay and I'm a lieutenant, or, and you know they're there, I'm gay and I'm a general. No, Don't Ask, Don't Tell's repeal is going to mean that people are going to be overt in their homosexuality. Now, if the military has any problem whatsoever, it is with overt heterosexuality. And I don't just say things. I saw something earlier today, and it bears looking at, if I can find it. There is a study that came out about rape, which in military speak is reduced to military sexual trauma, at the United States various military academies. namely West Point, Annapolis, Colorado Springs, and wherever the Coast Guard Academy is in Connecticut. And the upshot of that report is that sex crimes against female academy students is, in the fading days of 2010, yet a rampant problem. And yet it is the idea of overt homosexuality that worries Louis Gohmert, when rape is prevalent not only in the service academies, but in active line units as well. That is not a function of overt homosexuality. That is, in fact, a function of overt heterosexuality. But merely allowing gay people to serve openly, not overtly, conjures images of guys going into battle with, instead of, you know, metal Death Slayer in their iPod, the soundtrack to Cabaret. Overt. Not only is overt heterosexuality a problem in the service academies, in the 2009-2010 academic year, it's going up. In 2009-2010, the academies reported 41 sexual assaults involving cadets or midshipmen. That's a 64% jump from the previous year. The military is trying to put the best face on it by saying, this may not indicate an increase in instances of sexual assault occurring, as it could also be a result of training and education and victims' confidence in the department's ability to respond. And you know what? There's an element of truth in that. You'll notice that this happens in the first year of Barack Obama's presidency, when there has been a little bit more focus on this problem. So that may actually increase the reportage. Yeah, I know, Texas Betsy, not heterosexuality, sexual violence, different. I understand your point. But if Louis Gohmert gets to say that the entire military will fail if Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed, then I can use his tactics against him. And I can say that it is rampant, overt heterosexuality that is leading to all of these rapes in the service academies and in line units of the United States military. Can't I? Isn't sauce for the goose sauce for the gander? It's broadly defined at the service academies. Sure it is. It's not just rape. But that also does not work. Conversely, it doesn't mean there is no rape. There's a big difference between open and overt. But Louis Gohmert doesn't know that. And that's just sad and sick. But then again, Louis Gohmert is sick. Right? Yeah. So that's where we begin with tonight's edition of the Horn. It is about 5 minutes before the hour. Phone lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Thank you for your continued support of the Horn. We need all we can get. It's a challenge every month just to stay on the air. We'll be right back. I'm Bob.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, December 16, 2010.
Make way for the Groller Bear.
The what?
The Groller Bear. The Obama administration finally sues BP. Also, BP gets the WikiLeaks treatment. Plus, surprise, Fox News slants climate science.
Say it ain't so. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Thankfully, Ted Turner has mentioned another effect of global warming.
It will be 8 degrees hotter in 30 or 40 years, and basically none of the crops will grow. Most of the people will have died, and the rest of us will be cannibals.
If we don't control global warming, Ted Turner is going cannibal.
Well, you know what they say. You are what you eat. This is your Green News Report.
You can't say he didn't warn us.
Today's Green News Report is sponsored by the Grace Institute for Democracy and Election Integrity, announcing their first ever award ceremony for election officials who have made an outstanding contribution to election integrity and transparency. Celebrate the move towards more open and honest elections by coming to the ceremony if you're in the San Rafael, California area on Thursday, December 16th. To learn more or to learn how you can help bring more transparent elections to your state or county, please stop by democracyandelectionintegrity.org today. That's democracyandelectionintegrity.org. Okay, Des, finally, the Justice Department is bringing some justice against BP?
Yes, only 6 months later, but hey, better late than never, right?
Well, about time, indeed.
But before we get to that, you've heard of the grizzly bear, you've heard of the polar bear. Now it may be time to make way for the Groller Bear, the offspring of a polar bear-grizzly bear mating. Now, come on, it's better than Pizzly or Polizzly Bear, don't you think?
No, I kind of like Polizzly Bear. Thanks.
A bear with mixed brown and white fur that was shot after breaking into a cabin in the Arctic Circle was confirmed recently through DNA testing to be a hybrid grizzly polar bear. Now, biologists say it's because polar bears are increasingly being forced onto land farther south as their habitat, the Arctic sea ice, is melting, while warmer temperatures are pushing grizzly bear ranges farther north. Conservationists say hybridization can actually speed up the extinction of endangered species as they get absorbed by a larger population. Justice coming to BP.
We intend to prove that these violations caused or contributed to the massive oil spill and that the defendants are therefore responsible under the Oil Pollution Act.
After months of investigation, the Obama administration filed suit on Wednesday against British Petroleum in connection with the massive BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, the worst oil spill in U.S. history that released an estimated 206 million gallons of oil after an explosion on the Deepwater Horizon rig that killed 11 men. In a press conference announcing the suit, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said BP stands accused of multiple violations of safety and environmental regulations.
Failure to take the necessary precautions to secure the Macondo well prior to the April 20th explosion. Failure to utilize the safest drilling technology to monitor the well's condition. Failure to maintain continuous surveillance of the well. And failure to utilize and to maintain equipment and materials that were available and necessary to ensure the safety and protection of personnel, property, natural resources, as well as the environment.
Now, named in the suit are BP and its partners, Anadarko Petroleum, Moex Mitsui Limited, and the owner of the rig, Transocean Limited. But curiously, not named in the suit is Halliburton.
Conspiracy? Are you alleging a conspiracy?
I allege nothing.
Okay.
Halliburton's faulty job sealing the well is widely believed to be a leading cause
of the explosion. Congratulations.
other defendants could be named later. And that's not all. BP also got the WikiLeaks treatment this week, that treasure trove of diplomatic documents showing an international diplomacy deeply soaked in oil. The Guardian newspaper reports that diplomatic cables released this week reveal that 18 months before the massive blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, BP had a remarkably similar blowout of a natural gas rig off the coast of Azerbaijan in the Caspian Sea. No one was killed in that incident, but BP's business partners complained that BP was withholding information from them, and the cables show the president of Azerbaijan accusing BP of cheating the government out of billions in royalties.
And so they were trying to keep it secret, but the U.S. government knew about it?
Yes.
Because it was in these cables, right?
Yes.
Did the U.S. government keep it secret?
Yes.
That's why we need WikiLeaks. Press on.
Finally, BP is not alone in getting leaky this week. Fox News Channel also sprung leaks with memos showing management instructing on-air talent to slant coverage of climate change science. MediaMatters.org obtained leaked memos showing Fox News Channel's managing editor in Washington, Bill Salmon, pushing his on-air talent to insert doubt into the overwhelming scientific evidence of climate change. In one memo, Salmon ordered them to, quote, refrain from asserting that the planet has warmed or cooled in any given period without immediately pointing out that such theories are based on data that critics have called into question. Since then, that data has been upheld by multiple investigations, but somehow Fox didn't report that. Go figure.
Fox Climate Gate Gate. Love it. For more on that, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
With Fox on the Run, this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
A quick trip to the mailbag before we head to the phones. Is that okay by you? I hope so, because we're going to do it. And by the way, just asking, but come on, that Scissor Sisters tune I played going into the Green News Report? You could roll into town with a 50 caliber ablazing and that going in the headphones of your iPod, couldn't you? I mean, that's kind of happening. Sorry. I kind of oppose war, you know. I'm not fond of rolling into anywhere with anything blazing. But since this is all about whether or not the military can effectively kill, and heat bed burnt bodies and veins and my teeth, since it's about all of that silliness, I reckon anybody can kill, Jesus. Agnes just popped into the studio for a minute. Dear, would you share that little text message with us later, please? Just bring it in here.
You want me to cry again?
No, you can leave the room so you won't cry anymore. But I just want to read it to the Horn family and let them know what children are subjected to via text messaging these days in here in almost level West by God, Virginia. Anyway, going back to Kate's email, she says, "Oh, this is talking about Louis Gohmert. Oh, this guy is from Texas, right? Well, Bob, he's right about some things.
It is difficult to control my base instincts here, but alas, I don't have the energy to bring down an earthquake tonight. Your commentary's way ahead of me. Let all the homophobes take a discharge and go back home. The rapists don't get any attention because they're only abusing females. We don't matter, straight or queer. None of them boys like us because our old ladies look better in tight jeans than their old ladies, and we have sharper, tricked-out pickups. No wonder they're scared of us.
Ooh-wee.
Since this seems to be a gender issue, I always marvel at the fact that they are also concerned about male genitals. What's that got to do with the ability to invade a country and kill women and kids? I'm confused. Well, me too, Kate. And aside, this fool doesn't recognize that there is no freedom of speech in the military, but never mind, that's moot here. He's such a fool, a scared little boy, clutching his crotch and screaming. Probably a bit latent because he's so aggressive in his stance. Seismically challenged this week, signed, Kate. You do know
that,
right? It was declared sometime in the fairly recent past by none other than Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the leader of Iran, that gay folk have the ability to trigger earthquakes. And now, according to Louis Gohmert, who is apparently a spiritual twin to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the gay people have the ability to bring down entire civilizations. God. Continuing on in the email bag, Andy, who you heard from last night, said, I love the song on Israeli racism by John Fox. And I note studies showed that Israel is one of the most racist societies on the planet. Then again, what would you expect from a theocracy? There was a news piece about 6 months ago that addressed the plight of a Palestinian professional soccer player trying to make it in an Israeli city. He ran into a great deal of racist epithets and demands for him to go home. I would think, whether the Israelis would admit it or not, he was home, which seems to be the problem with the Israeli nation as a whole. What's under their feet is multiracial territory, and they don't like to acknowledge that. From David in South Carolina, no mention of 99ers still in all this talk about estate taxes, tax cuts, etc. The 99ers don't even get a mention. It's as if they don't exist. David, from one 99er to another, we don't. We don't exist statistically, and I'd say we're pretty close to not existing existentially, at least as far as our betters in Washington are concerned. Clayton writing in, he says, in Mr. Comedy's comments, he implies that those of us who are straight have no control of ourselves. Yes, he does. That's what happens when you're a fundamentalist. When you're a fundamentalist, the fundamentalist religion is so obsessed with sex that everything to them is sexual. That's why a disproportionate amount of the pedophilia and adultery and fornication seems to happen inside religious institutions, whether it be Roman Catholic priests buggering little boys, or whether it's the fundamentalist minister who gets caught with his hands in the secretary's drawers, as they like to say in fundamentalist circles. Amazing, isn't it? Jim dropped a note. He said, more bullshit. What are these idiots doing? Giving one another mustache rides? Cutting right to the heart of the issue. There goes Jim. Just heard you discuss Louis Gohmert's rant about homosexuals in the military. Sounds more like a Gomer to me, but on second thought, any such comparison would be an insult to Private Pyle. Whether the real one or the one played by Vincent D'Onofrio, I'm adding this part, whether the real one played by Jim Nabors or the one derided as Private Pyle played by Vincent D'Onofrio in Full Metal Jacket. So I think that pretty much catches us up with the mailbag. A quick mention before we go back to the phones. Something amazing has happened in the last couple of days. I told you that we were at the middle of the month, and I told you that we were scarcely a few hundred dollars. Well, we started out a couple of hundred dollars away from being one week into our fundraising. Then, via a generous donation by a longtime supporter and a couple of more of you, we got over that 1 week hump. We are tonight at exactly the halfway mark of December. And I was just because a couple of contributions rolled in, lo and behold, we are only $250 away from being halfway through with our fundraising for the month. That is stunning and amazing. And it fills me with delight to be able to say that. And if possible, it would be wonderful to go over, or at least cross that halfway mark this evening. Wouldn't it? So, if you can, let's do. And with that, let's go to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, Susan.
I would like to bring to your attention the name of a nice gentleman by the name of Steuben. Well, actually, it's not Steuben per se. It's okay, just a minute here. I lost it.
Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. He was, and this Gohmert guy just blows me away. You know, he's going on and on and on about how horrendously you can't have gays in the military and such a horrible thing. Okay. The name, Friedrich Wilhelm August Heike Ferdinand von Steuben, born September 17, 1730. Among other things, he is noted for writing the Revolutionary War Drill Manual that became the standard for the United States right up until the War of 1812. He served under George Washington as chief of staff. So, big time hotshot general, right? Came all the way from Prussia. And there's evidence that he was just about as gay as it was possible to get.
Absolutely. Weren't there more along the way?
Oh,
lots
yeah.
More, thousands more.
Because you see, in England and in Europe, it was a death penalty. Automatic. No questions. Very little in the way of a trial. Just don't hung him. Nobody wanted that, so if they could, they got out of doubt. They got out of dodge if at all possible. They'd rather go out and fight, quote, savages. But he spent the rest of his life as a citizen of the United States, he harmed no one. And he did this country a lot of good. In fact, there's evidence this country wouldn't be this country. This country would probably still be England.
Absolutely.
Now, people like Gohmert just drive me up a wall.
You know, I'm not sure if somewhere out there, there might not be in the archives of Strictly Confidential. I think Peter probably did a better job of noting who was going to be on the program and who wasn't. He had a man named Denny who would come on the program. He was on the program two or three times. And the man was an absolute wellspring of information about the positive influence of gay people inside the American military. And the thing is, he had data for everybody from von Steuben up through the current wars.
Yeah, because he got thrown out of the military, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right.
He was one of the very, very few.
Well, I think he was. I think he was a Vietnam veteran, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and he basically he flat out came out in during Vietnam, and that ended that right there. But it, you know, it just.
You know, if nothing else, that you just sort of opened the door a little crack there. Susan, for something I think that has value, we need to eliminate don't ask, don't tell, so cowardly straight people can no longer march into a sergeant's office, dip a curtsy, and say, I'm queer, and get out of their obligation.
Although I have to admit, very, very few did it.
But it was done.
Yeah,
now, granted, most people, imagine this, if you want to get your head around the degree of fear and homophobia
and desperation
that surrounds the idea of even being perceived to be gay, let's go to the story of the Nuge. Ted Nugent?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Ted... who went on to bed his adopted daughter. Ted, upon being informed that he was due to go to Vietnam, he had a couple of weeks lead time. So, consequently, he spent those 2 or 3 weeks not bathing. Not showering, not changing his clothes, and urinating and defecating upon himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a couple of weeks, he showed up at his draft board, and they said, we want no part of you.
Yeah. And then he went home, took a shower, and grinned a lot.
Right.
I will listen. You know, I don't have any quarrel with, say, during Vietnam, if some guy proceeded to say, I'm gay, when he wasn't, because in the 60s, that followed him. That followed him big time.
Well, it doesn't follow him anymore. It didn't follow him to a mountaintop removal site in southern West Virginia, where he stood shoulder to shoulder with that sleazy gut bucket Don Blankenship.
Now it doesn't, but it did in the 60s. It was bad in the 60s.
It didn't follow him to San Antonio, Texas, where he played the national anthem, the Jimi Hendrix version. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Beck stared at him like the little girls stare at Justin Bieber now. No.
You know, that image just makes me ill, not because of the sexual idea, but because of the idea of Glenn Beck staring at anybody that way for any reason. Yeah!
No, Glenn Beck staring at him, trust me.
I know, but Glenn Beck staring at anybody for any reason just weirds me out completely. I mean, that man's creepy. You know, that's one man I don't want any part of.
I think you speak for the entire Horn audience, Susan.
Yeah, that guy, the bursar, who refused his orders, snuts in a military prison, and then out he goes with BCD.
Elaborate, please.
The army doctor who disobeyed orders.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the birther?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets 6 months at, I would assume would be the equivalent of Leavenworth. And then, they boot him out with bad conduct.
Good. Yeah, I loved his excuses. In fact, I think I've got them here real quick. this deserves to be expanded upon. I'm glad you brought it up. The case that Susan is talking about is a right wing, the right wing doctor. Can you imagine being a physician and being this way?
Yeah.
The right wing doctor who refused to deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan. Which was it? I can't remember.
Afghanistan.
And when he got busted, filed a lawsuit claiming that Barack Obama was not a natural-born citizen and therefore he didn't have to obey the order. You know, I remember when people would do that during the Iraq War over the fact that George Bush's actions in starting it were illegal, and the Hannity jobs and the Flimballs and
went
the like
berserk.
Went absolutely berserk. Yeah, this clown's name, this gutless clown's name, is Lieutenant Colonel Terrence Lakin, a 17-year Army veteran, refused to report for duty at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, because he said his orders emanated from an illegal president who's not a natural-born citizen. When he pleaded guilty in military court to a charge that included not meeting with a superior when ordered to do so and not reporting for duty to Fort Campbell, you know, at least he wasn't charged with desertion, which is what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But at the hearing, he was given an opportunity to speak in his own behalf, and he said the following, Susan. He said, "I was praying and soul-searching. I believed there was a question that needs to be answered to ensure a valid chain of command. But I had asked every question, done everything else I could, short of disobeying orders, without success." Now, I'm no authority on the Uniform Code of Military Justice, but I would be willing to hazard a guess that there is no exception in there for "I disobeyed a direct order because I was busy praying and soul-searching."
Nope.
However, you want to make a little wager, Susan? How long before "I was praying and soul-searching" turns him into a right-wing fundamentalist martyr?
Ugh. Oh, about 30 seconds ago.
I know. Isn't it just awful to be able to predict this stuff?
Yeah, it's just
terrible. I was praying and soul-searching.
You know, you mentioned these bigots, you know, with their excuses for not repealing "Don't Ask, Don't Tell," and these army guys who are whining about "Don't Ask, Don't Tell." And you went into this great big long thing about what they should do. Donald was a drill sergeant. I'm sure he stole this line from somebody else, but it consisted I think four words: "Soldier, shut up," and "Soldier." And they all these guys sounded exactly the same from when they were trying to integrate everything. The exact same words.
See, that's one thing that needs bearing in mind. There was some pushback to the integration of the armed services, but there's no argument that it wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But there will be pushback here too, and it will be dangerous. Just because "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" gets repealed, if in fact it does, just because that happens does not mean that the environment is going to become safe for gay people in the military, because it is still a very inherently homophobic institution, at least among enough of a minority to make it dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never mind that the numbers, the percentages are extremely high of folks saying, "I don't care if they're gay or not, if I get their job done."
but it only takes one idiot.
Right, but there are enough skinheads. There are enough of those people who were brought in under George Bush's desperate measures to fill out the complement during the Iraq War. There are enough of those to make life dangerous just about anywhere in the U.S. military for anyone who does come out. What Don't Ask, Don't Tell effectively does is make sure that people can't be institutionally tormented, you know, being outed on their Facebook page or being outed by having their email read or anything like that.
Yeah.
It protects them against bigoted superior officers.
Right. You know, you mentioned skinheads. A thought just popped into my head. Maybe I'm living in the past too much. We're going to regret recruiting those people.
If we don't already.
Remember who? Oh, hey, history's already done it. History's already showed it. Who trained Lee Harvey Oswald to shoot?
Military.
The U.S. Marine Corps.
U.S. Marine Corps, sure. Not that I think that Lee Harvey Oswald shot anybody, but I'm just funny that way.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is, hey, we bring these sociopaths into the military and train them. They're going to come back and what do you expect these people to do? They're going to go berserk. And they're going to have guns because that's what people like these do, is they collect lots and lots of very high-powered guns. Weird. If I had the money, I'd be buying Kevlar.
I understand.
Oh, I wanted to tell you, the other day I had a very, rather surprising, 3-hour-long, reasonable, that's what floored me, it was actual reasonable exchange of ideas, a conversation about politics, life, history, the United States, the way we're going, with, believe it or not, a God.
Forsaken.
Conservative.
Bless your heart for trying. Did you change their heart or their mind?
I don't know about that, but there were no invectives. There were no...
No allegations of Muslim...
Traitor.
Muslim fascist Lamunist Kenyans?
No.
Well, then you weren't talking to a teabagger. Sounds like you were talking to an Eisenhower Republican.
Yeah, he didn't freak out. Well, he came right out and said he was. He didn't freak out when I told him I thought that the Second Amendment had been twisted way out of proportion. I actually ran into a reasonable conservative. Well,
they used to exist.
Well, there's actually one. He's my insurance agent.
Oh, okay. No. Stop. You just ruined everything.
No, he didn't sell me anything. He came by to see how I was.
Okay. But he probably hopes to sell you something down the road.
No, uh-uh. Because he knows there isn't anything to sell. I've already bought it. We bought it years ago, a couple years ago. But the thing is, he does not act like that for some reason, which is really, really surprising.
Well, then again, he's west of the mountain range, right? I mean, you're in Oregon and everything. Yeah, aren't you the one who told me you've got to get out east of the mountains to find the real crazy in your state?
Well, there's an old joke in western Oregon and western Washington that we keep sending up unmanned satellites or probes east of the mountains to look for intelligent life, and we can't find any.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, Oh, I would like everybody who is into prayer, to whoever, I don't really care. Say a couple words when they're doing it, to maybe say a couple words to whatever deity they're talking to about Senator Wyden.
Yeah, what's going on there?
He has cancer.
Oh.
Just diagnosed.
What variety?
Prostate. So he has a shot. And they caught it early.
I would imagine he has better than a shot.
Yeah. But anyway,
the cure is no pleasure. But he's got a shot.
Wonderful pun.
Wasn't trying to be funny. It really isn't a pleasure.
But he's one of the good guys, and we'd like to keep him around for a while.
He has his moments.
Yes. And Senator Jeff is turning out to be also one of the good guys. He's one of the guys behind the move to revamp the filibuster to make them actually get up and talk.
You know, that's one of the things that bothers me the most is any discussion of the filibuster, Susan, has to be taken in context, in the context of understanding what will happen if that thing's gone and the Republicans get back in power,
no,
which there is every likelihood in the world of having happen in 2012.
Yes, I realize that, but they're not talking about getting rid of it. They're talking about saying, you can filibuster, fine. But you got to get up there and you got to talk. You can't just say, I object, and then leave and go off for the weekend. You got to talk. And if you leave the floor, they take the vote.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, I think so. You can talk for the next 4 years if you can line the people up.
Not a bad idea at all. And you know what? To get 40 people to do that, that's going to be 40 pissed off people.
Well, a lot of the people in the Senate are just really torqued out. Jeff, you know, Senator Jeff is—he's also
He's the one that's been talking about it the most.
Yeah, he's also not a big friend of Cole.
No, he's not. We just need him to get a little more busy on that.
Hey, I'm working on him. I'm working on him. Give me time here.
I know you are, and you have been for a while. Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening, dear.
How's Doodle doing?
She's getting back to it. She was rowdy enough today to stamp her foot and insist that I, by God, give her some peanut brittle. So, yeah. A generous gift basket arrived here that was just full of delightful little goodies like gourmet hot pepper cheese and peanut brittle and little chocolate things and crackers and crispies and things, and she pounced on the peanut brittle before anybody had a chance, and I had to wrest it from her fingers because she has braces, you see, and peanut brittle is not good for braces.
No, 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 no. It's really bad on braces. It's bad for teeth, period, because it cracks them.
Well, that's why I handed her one, and I said, I catch you chewing, you never see it again. You let this dissolve in your mouth. Daddy, do you want it? Yes, okay. You know how it goes.
I've been there.
Have a good night, Susan.
Well, give my love to Agnes. Oh, by the way. You know that subject we talked about that one time when I called you?
Yes.
Nice. I had to send the first one that I got back. And I just got its replacement. So
okay.
You know what's going to be arriving.
Okay, we'll absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Susan. Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so, so the NAACP, they're going to do a little boycott or some sort of march, actually, in Charleston. Did you know about this?
No, what?
Okay. Oh, yeah, because...
My Charleston?
South Carolina.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because that's where they're doing a big celebration for the Civil War. Listen, this is what they're doing in some auditorium. The having a ball.
Yes.
They will pay $100 a ticket, don formal and period dress, eat and dance the Virginia reel as the band plays Dixie. The highlight of the evening will be a reenacting the signing of the South Carolina's Ordinance of Secession. Okay.
Quick interruption. Isn't the Virginia reel living proof that white people cannot dance?
Well, that's what I was, of course, I'm laughing at that thinking, ooh, God, I'd be marching just on the strength of that not happening, let alone nothing else. But, yeah, so the NAACP is having a big march on December 20th because they're saying that they don't care about, observance, but they're against disrespect. And the guy is saying that it's just a celebration of slavery straight up. And, in South Carolina, one-third of the state is black. We're not talking about a few people.
No.
A bunch of people.
Yeah.
And I think about South Carolina.
If they weren't gerrymandered into a million tiny pieces, there are actually enough African-American folks in South Carolina to change the politics of the state.
No, I know. It's incredible how they've been marginalized because I look at the people like DeMint, and I'm like, oh, my God. Then I look at the demographics of South Carolina, I just shake my head because I think it has like one of the larger black populations in the country down there. But anyway, I just think, I have to keep my eye out because the 20th is coming up and, they're going to be marching straight up. And I think there's more marches planned throughout the South.
You know what? Let me just add, if I may, Sandra, that fun things happen when racists start getting liquored up.
Well, some of these people might get their ass beat. I'm reading. I'm telling you, they don't sound... These are NAACP people, black people, they don't sound too pleased about this celebration happening. But anyway...
Well, when racists start getting liquored up, they start saying all the things that they said they weren't going to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a far stretch for the members of the black community to be a bit aghast by this. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, and tangential. Well, A, I'm not sure that they won't get all liquored up and go fire on Fort Sumter or re-secede or something. You just don't know.
No, I just was like, I don't know. Anyway, I just was sort of, that sort of took me aback, and I'm thinking, oh, dear God. So
what'll be interesting will be to see how many members of South Carolina state government show up.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is a state.
Yeah, you reckon what's her name, the new the incoming governor?
The Indian?
Yeah, reckon she gonna show up with her Scarlett O'Hara curls hanging down by her ears?
She don't know what's going on. No, all of it just sounds really like I fly on the wall time. You know what I mean? Because I know it's gonna be damn interesting. Because shit is so deep in the Carolinas.
But... Oh, bad deep.
Well, as we
contemplate that, let's remember that I tweeted it earlier today. I said Tigers don't change their stripes and Republicans don't change their sheets. I got to share a clip with you since I got you because it's always fun to get the laugh out of you. I got to admit, it just is. Have you seen this business about C-SPAN's Washington Journal or Morning Call-In or whatever the hell it is, where they were talking about Michael Steele deciding to run for head of the DNC again?
No, I haven't been able to catch up because I was too busy laughing at the idea that they can't shake that Negro. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Well, some of them apparently want to, and they're kind of getting kind of pushy about it, Sandra.
Oh,
I have here for you an excerpt from Tuesday's Washington Journal.
Is this when they have the Republicans call, the Democrats call?
Yeah, this is that one. And I've got a couple of Republican calls for you on the subject of Michael Steele going after the DNC chairmanship.
Oh, great. Okay.
You're just going to so love this. It'll be here in a minute.
Annapolis. Jack on the Republican line. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, good morning, Greta.
Good morning.
You're not going to like what I have to say, so you put your finger on the dump button.
Well,
I don't want Steele to be chairman of the Republican National Committee because he's black. I think we have bent over backwards to accommodate blacks in this country with the.
Now, I'm going to stop right there real quick, Sandra, because it's only fair to note that we can play a little game. Remember that old game called Hi Bob that people used to play in college while watching the Bob Newhart show, and you had to drink a shot every time they said Hi Bob? Well, if we were to play that, every time this guy repeats one of those crypto Klansman phrases like, we've done so much for black people in this country, you and me would be falling down drunk by the end of this clip, okay? So, but just keep that in mind. We're going to have some real fun in a minute.
The affirmative action stuff that's been on for now 60 years, it's time we ended it. And as a black person, I think he's inhibited to come out and condemn some of these Black Panthers, like this creep up in Philadelphia who said that they should start killing white children. And I never heard a single word from Michael Steele condemning this guy.
Black Panther, Black Panther, Black Panther, Black Panther. Doesn't that just kill you?
Oh, what in the world? Okay.
But no, there's, you know, Ginsu commercial, there's more.
All right, Jack. But what about the argument that the Republicans did capture the House, that they made gains in the Senate, and that Michael Steele was the chair of the RNC at that time? He has that record. And that he made the point yesterday, according to the Washington Times, that this is they need to make a bigger tent for the Republican Party and show diversity.
I disagree with their diversity is terrible for any country. It's destroying this country, and it will destroy any country.
All right. Republican in Huntsville, Alabama. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with the previous caller, a couple of callers ago, about why they wouldn't support us.
They all sound alike, don't they? I mean, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. It's 6 o'clock in the central time zone. Dude has just gotten up, turned his coffee on, taken his antipsychotic medications, and now he's going to call Washington Journal and talk about the black folk.
Mm.
You know, it wouldn't be. It ain't funny, okay?
It's not funny, but the reason why I'm tripping is because that lady who's coordinating it, you know, she just has some dudes saying, I don't want him in, be elected because he's black. And she sort of continues on with the questioning. And see, at this point, I would be yelling, cracker, 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 cracker. I couldn't just sit there and go with it.
But you know what? Washington Journal host has got to be one of the most god-awful broadcast jobs in the entire world.
No, for sure. But
I mean, it would be like being in a Muslim part of India and hosting Hindu Today.
Well, no, I mean, she's doing her job, but I just am sort of, because these people talk with such authority in their ignorance and hatefulness. That's the thing. Like, that old white dude is perfectly okay saying what he's saying, and he know he right. And it's just like, what the? And it's Huntsville. Where's the other one from?
The first one was from Annapolis, Maryland.
Oh, okay.
The old old color line state.
No, that state had more than enough folks. Anyway, and then the other one.
I mean, did I miss something? What's this about a Black Panther in Philadelphia saying, well, I'll kill the white chillens?
Yeah, that must have been on a Glenn Beck episode that we missed. I don't know. I missed that one, man. Listen. I mean, what is up with Alabama? See, that's state. I know you got connections there, but it's just really, they got nice beaches. I don't know what else to say.
You know what? They got a city where a monk once built an entire teeny tiny model
of the entirety of Jerusalem. They got all kinds. They got rockets. They got all kinds. Helen Keller was blind, couldn't hear, and could not speak, and still knew she had to get the hell out.
Well, no, it's just incredible because, of course, talking about Alabama right quick, I was just tripping because I was reading about the, for some reason, don't laugh, I was reading about the quarterback from the Chargers, Phillip Rivers.
Oh, yeah, Athens, Alabama. That's about 40 miles east of where I grew up.
Okay, well, I was reading, la, la, la. Okay, he has a lot of kids. Then it came, then the line that kind of killed me. He started dating his damn wife when she was in the seventh grade.
I know.
And he was a senior. And I'm looking at my nieces, I'm thinking, oh, no, shotguns, prison, whatever. You understand what I'm saying?
Jerry Lee Lewis.
That's what's going to be happening to me. If some senior was trying to date a seventh grader, and I'm thinking, oh, shit, but it's Alabama.
But look how it worked out. She's richer than Jesus.
Well, she all right, and they got the kids and whatever, but I just was sort of taken aback because I'm thinking, well, these are young people, but how, you know, that dating so early, it's just something, a 13-year-old, anyway. Sorry, that's just...
No, I get it completely, but... No, at the same, you know, at the same time, I know literally hundreds of good liberals in Alabama, but...
I mean, that one woman who would call, I forget her name, you know, blogger?
Loretta Knoll.
Yeah.
She's one.
Of course, any place in the South is full of all sorts of different people. No, it's just, you know.
But the thing is, while the liberals are out, you know, the liberals have jobs. They got to go to the job. They got to do the job.
Do what you do.
You know, don't have time to go out on no picket lines or nothing because they got a job. But, you know, you cannot. No, I don't care. You cannot convince me, Sandra, that dude there calling Washington Journal and giving poor Greta there Excedrin headache number 666. You can't convince me dude has a job. He's okay, Huntsville, Alabama. He is more than likely retired from the Redstone Arsenal or from some defense contractor job.
Right.
And like I said, he gets up in the morning. He hasn't taken his whatever that is that keeps your mind from going sideways. He hadn't taken that yet. And all of a sudden he hears, you know, a real American from Annapolis, Maryland calling in saying, we've done enough for them black people.
Well, no, but see, it's really funny that it's Michael Steele, because the thing about Michael Steele that is hilarious is how he will completely embrace what Obama, who couldn't be black if it was midday on Sunday, will run from. Michael Steele will say, I'm straight, completely tongue-in-cheek, making fun of whoever, and I got to give him credit. He's hilarious. Oh, I'm straight. I was like, no, you did not say that, fool. In the meanwhile, you got Obama.
Yeah, because he and Snoop, they hanging out.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just a joke. But he's playing them. And I know these white people, they hating it, obviously.
Well, no, the funny thing, that's the other thing, though. The white Republicans, they're going, he is street. He's liable to bust a cap in us if we don't elect him.
Well, that's what I mean. He's playing folks.
But she made a real point. Poor Greta did. I mean, has everybody forgotten that it was on his watch that they took the House, that they gained in the Senate? It was on his watch that they have convinced a big chunk of America that Barack Obama is a Kenyan Muslim fascist communist?
Right. They don't want to hear that because they just sort of, you know, it's irrational. They just decided that he has to go. I mean, yeah, that she did make a really good point. And the thing about him, though, is like he's sort of saying, make me. I'm not going to step away. I mean, people are gritting their teeth because they're like, oh, no. So who's running against him?
I had an email about that.
Right?
No, it's a nobody.
Oh, it's a nobody. I thought a couple of other names popped up. Oh, well.
I had a tweet earlier today from Identity H is the name in Wisconsin, said the guy running against Steele is Rince Priebus. Now, that's R-E-I-N-C-E. Priebus, the head of the Wisconsin GOP, and literally the whitest man in Wisconsin.
Well, that name. I'm still stuck on that. Wow, wow. Listen, anyway, the Michael.
I mean, Rince Priebus. He sounds like one of the boys down at the ball at Ashley's in Gone with the Wind, doesn't he? Rance Priebus.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. But it's so, what's really funny to me is that it's so predictable what comes out of the mouths of those callers. I mean, it's just like, yeah, okay, turn the page already, you know? The diversity, affirmative action, it's like, oh, dear God, are you kidding?
And yet, what would happen if you took either one of those, and you mentioned those numbers that Mary Landrieu mentioned on the floor of the Senate last Friday, about the median income of black families in the U.S. versus the median income of Latino families in the U.S. versus the median income of white families in the U.S. What would happen to them if you told them that the median income of a black family was $18,000 a year, if that?
Yeah, well, no, they don't have any conception of, you know, the sort of American Express card they all got just by virtue, you know. That will never be explained to these white folks. And you live in a country where payouts to black farmers who were screwed over every which way is called reparations. I mean, then you know where you're at. Or you're in a country where a hotel will say, "Oh yeah, that's fine. We won't let Muslims come up here." I mean, where are we living? That story.
Doesn't that just drive you a little bit nuts?
I have to congratulate you on that damn song. I was like, let me put my coffee down, whatever I have, when I listened to it, because I didn't know what to expect. So that was great, very good.
And yet, it's a one story story in the Washington Post.
Well, no. Did you? I think I sent to you that it's just so curious that there was no comment for. There's not a story in the Washington Post where you can't post a comment. And all of a sudden, that particular story, nowhere to be found?
Right.
I thought that was, I don't know, that just struck me as a bit odd. And it was very disgusting. I think you made a great point by, screw the racial aspect of it. These people lost money, okay? They lost work behind this shit. And I think that's a really good point.
And, you know, I mentioned last night, Sandra, that you know, if that was a union shop,
No way.
I mean, I'm the shop steward. The whole hotel walks.
No, exactly. Ahoot would have to go somewhere else.
But the funny thing is, and I got to thinking about it after the program, after I'd already said that, do you know that in Washington, D.C., Washington damn D.C., it is harder than finding hen's teeth to find a union hotel. I think there are two of them. One of the reasons that shindig that I go to every year is held at the Omni Shoreham, that old Grand Dame hotel where Harry Truman used to play poker with his old Senate buddies, and they built a separate entrance for him so he could just slip in and slip out after he became president. The beautiful, beautiful old Grand Hotel. The Beatles stayed there when they played D.C. I mean, you know, dig it. The reason that thing gets held there is that is a union hotel. And they are damned hard to find. There might be two or three others. So that means that the Mandarin Oriental is probably not a union shop. So every worker there is at sufferance. And if they say, you don't get paid for 3 days because Ehud Barak is here, you go home.
Yeah, no, but it's just incredible. I mean, I'm just sort of thinking, I would think that there would be some laws broken there, or are they sort of invoking their diplomatic privileges? I mean, it's a stunning story that is just getting booed. I think you're probably, no one else is mentioning this story. I thought it was, I read it twice, because I was like, I couldn't even wrap my head around it. It was just so awful and so racial and racist and so apartheid-like, where they don't want to have any kind of physical contact with these people.
Right, and if you want to drill down a layer lower, Sandra, there's no discrimination in the discrimination. We're talking about, an African dude who is apparently non-Saharan, shall we say, or equatorial or whatever. An African of not Arabic. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Who just happens to be Muslim?
Right. No.
I mean, it's not like he's up there running the vacuum with a keffiyeh on his head.
No, I know. I mean, the whole thing is just like so irrational, like all of those sort of isms. But anyway, the other thing that I, you know, just wanted to know your opinion was the, oh my God, my presidency will end if this doesn't pass L. Now, they're trying to claim that they didn't say that, but that just, I was like, oh my God, we.
Yeah, because it, because the claim was made by, again, Congressman DeFazio from Oregon.
No, but.
And they immediately, oh, we didn't say that to him. Why would we? He's a liberal. Why would we even talk to him?
Oh, no, but it was just, it just really made me queasy thinking, oh, you got to be out of your goddamn mind. I mean, your presidency? Is that what this is all about?
And, well, yeah, it kind of is. But the funny thing is, how is it that it, it how, because it, I keep hearing these same damn talking points, Sandra, and nobody wants to talk about the fact families making less than $40,000 and individuals making less than $20,000, their taxes go up with this deal.
Up, which, once again, we're not talking about a couple of million in this country. Millions of people fall into that.
And you know what? Maybe we're not talking about it because it's what we want. Because, after all, it is the poor and the struggling and the working in this country that carry those rich the hummingbird tongue canape eating slobs on their backs every day of the week.
Oh no, it's just totally disgusting. And you know, I mean, you know, I was talking to my mother, and she made a good point. She said, "Well, it's obvious," and this is a 72-year-old woman. She said, "Well, it's obvious that Obama, you know, isn't looking out for working folks." I mean, you know, and it's just like something we always say here. But like I said, my mother is 72 years old. And she just is shaking her head thinking, you know, she thought it would be something else. So, come on now. He had lost someone like her. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I read that article you sent along from the Black Agenda Reporter.
Oh, yeah, they don't mess around. They do not F around, okay?
And doesn't that kind of put, I mean, now the other thing that we have had just brooded about the for-profit media for the last week or so, ever since this cave-in was first announced, was that, well, you obviously disagree with the vast majority of Barack Obama's supporters. And you sent me that link to the Daily Coast diary from the African-American woman who said, you know, I'm done with you white progressives if you're going to behave like this. I don't have any sort of sense whatsoever whether that business is being brooded about is true, that he has rock-solid support in the African-American community that is absolutely unshakable. Because I hear from you, and I've got a number of other African American listeners in the audience, and that ain't what I'm hearing.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it's like, you know, and it's not like my, you know, my mother was like expecting whatever. I mean, politicians, but she just said that this is way, way out of, you know, out of the norm. I mean, the guy is obviously, like that picture showed, I hate to say it, Reagan Democrat, and I think that is the new title for president, not sure at this point.
I'm beginning to wonder.
Well, did you play that little song I sent for you?
No, I have not yet.
All right. Anyway, listen, I gotta let you go.
All right.
I got nothing else. I'm just sort of struggling along.
No, I don't think it doesn't sound like a struggle, Sandra. But you have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. And Sandra calling from California, and yeah, our buddy from Huntsville that worked at Redstone, as David in Tennessee notes, sure he did, as a janitor. Let's just finish that off real quick. Our buddy from Alabama. It won't take but a couple of minutes. You need to hear the, and again, not because it's fun to play a racist, not because I can't fill up the rest of the program, but because it is important to hear. You know what? If you go to the zoo and you see a lion in the zoo, they're usually laying there going, oh, shit, I'm in a zoo. But if you see them in the wild, they're a completely different animal. So, too, with classic Southern racists.
Because he was black. I don't have anything against black people.
Of course not.
But I noticed after he took over, all the letters that I kept getting from the Republican committee want me to donate my money, they were wanting to keep supporting these rhino, what we call rhino Republicans, which really should be in the Democratic Party. And so I just quit giving my money that I've been donating for about 35 years every year to the Republican Party because of that reason, because I just took my money and give it to the individual people that I wanted to vote for that were conservative Republicans and quit giving in to everything that the Democrats wanted. And for as getting the black vote for the Republican Party, it's never going to happen because you see what happened to Miss Clinton. You see how they praised her all those years about her husband being the second of the first black president? Well, they stabbed him in the back, and they're still stabbing white people in the back because 90% of the
poor white people
party in the black population.
Medicine kicking in.
And I'm not a racist.
No.
That I grew up in, they want to tag the white people, all white people, as racist. So
no, just you, buddy.
To vote for.
All right.
Yeah. All right. That's enough. Thank you. Go. Go. Put your sheet and pillowcase on to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I think I have the most outrageous story. Have you heard about this story in Georgia?
You mean the prison strike?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's did you hear the list of demands?
They want medical care.
Yeah.
They want better food. They want to be actually paid something for their labor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a real list of radical, wild-eyed demands, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing still that well, actually, it isn't amazing that it's not covered, but it says so much.
What I find interesting, David, is the solidarity that's been shown in forming this, because it crosses racial lines, it crosses gang lines, it crosses all manner of ethnic lines, because apparently these inmates in Georgia who are staging this strike and refusing to come out of their cells, even in the face of real intimidation by the screws, they're figuring out things that a lot of people who aren't in the stir can't seem to.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's to me, it's a real big sign of the times. And I did promise you I'm sending it to you right now. Remember I said I was going to give you the most outrageous video? I think this video is it's close to equal, or if not past that, what I just you won't believe it when you play it to your listening audience. It's we'll title this soap.
Okay, I've got it right here. Let's by all means, let's give it a listen.
Are you strapped in?
Okay. Okay. This comes from Fox 59 WXIN.
Yes.
Indianapolis.
Listen.
And
carefully.
Does this need any setup at all?
Soap.
It's soap.
Yes, soap.
It comes from Noblesville, Indiana. Oh, yeah. Dear God, I think I know where, if I'm seeing this right, I think I know where our buddies in Annapolis and Huntsville are going to go looking for their soap.
You can't, these quotes, Sandra's listening, you won't believe this shit. Holy shit.
People are the reason I'm here. I like caring for patients and
no,
we can make a one-on-one connection,
David,
with them. Johnson Memorial is a hospital you can believe in.
Can you turn it down?
Here we go.
All right, good.
These soaps sold as Black Americana in Noblesville have kicked off a major debate. Are they just a lighthearted look at history or not?
Colored
General
soap?
Store owner
Darkie?
Gary DeWester remains steadfast.
Wait,
neither the soaps
the
nor he is in any way racist.
Oh, my God. No, he's not racist.
Hearing the controversy,
they're
Carolyn
adorable.
Gentner bought two bars, including one labeled Colored Kids.
I do not believe that it's racist. I believe it's nostalgic. I believe that if this is going to be an issue, that we should ban Kroger's for selling Aunt Jemima syrup.
Supporters want people to see the soaps and Gary's Noblesville store for what it is.
I think I have a feeling what's going to be in the soap dishes in Charleston at their little ball, don't you?
Yeah.
Here we go.
trinkets, they say, of American history for sale. Clay Hicks is an IU student and knows the DeWesters.
They're good people, and they've never shown any signs of racism before that any of us have ever seen.
His opinion on the soaps?
White guy.
The soaps are antiques. He owns an antique store. If he had gone home and made the soaps and wrote racist things on them in his basement and then tried to sell them, then that would be a different story. But these are antiques.
Gary's many supporters are on Fox 59's Facebook page. Courtney Van Vels writes, "We live in a free country where we can buy and sell as we wish. If we took everything off the market that offended someone, we'd probably not have many things left." Cameron Trugesser emailed, "Your recent story covering the racist soap in Noblesville was revolting in every aspect. This soap was a replica, antique, as are many other items in the store. Real Black Americana pieces are growing in value thanks to celebrities like Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah Winfrey, Bill Cosby, and Spike Lee amassing huge collections. It's led to an escalation of prices in the thousands for authentic items of African American history."
As for the $4 soaps, Gary now tells me he is completely sold out. Because of the controversy this week, he says supporters have driven in from as far as Evansville in the south and South Bend from the north over 2 hours to come to Noblesville and buy the soaps. He says the last 9 bars were sold to a black woman who said the soaps were funny and cute. People are collectors.
At Ferris State University in Michigan, there's a Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia showcasing these dolls, black minstrels, those familiar jockey figurines, and yes, black Americana soaps. Refusing to bow to pressure, Gary has vowed to move out of the Logan Village Mall. Other shopkeepers now concerned they'll lose business because Gary's store was such a draw. The controversy remains, though, over the soaps.
You know what's important, David?
Yeah.
These are replica soaps.
I know. That's the important thing. You know what's crazy?
It's not like he went to an estate sale and there was a crate of old racist soap.
I'll tell you what's the craziest thing about this story, which doesn't make sense at all. There's actually an interview with this guy, and they're interviewing him, and he says, people are buying them. I'm not racist. his landlord had no idea he was selling the soaps. This landlord must be getting a cut or something. Because then he said the landlord was surprised when he found out he was selling the soaps. And look at how Fox.
David in Tennessee makes a great point, David.
Yeah.
He says, you know, replica? Replica? You want a replica? Yeah. Look at the shit in the book.
That's true. It's one of those. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in terms of. Wasn't that shocking? A black lady came to pick some of this crap up.
Well, you'll notice that they saved that for the last because rules of primacy and recency say that's what you remember, what you hear first and what you hear latest. And so you put that at the end of. Oh, okay. And of course. The tacit imprimatur of approval from Spike Lee, Oprah Winfrey, and Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, well, you know.
Makes it sound like they came there to buy some racist soap, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I think I know what's going on, but when the old women come through the door, they don't tell them it's a replica. They just pick it up and they buy it because they think it's an antique. Those are some of the, I've seen actually at, this is something I don't think I don't know if people are aware of this, but they do this at auctions. They'll make replicas of race memorabilia, and they try to fool the buyers. Oh, I got something good.
The rubes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hilarious because it's like you can tell right off the bat. I mean, I'll give this to people who are in the reproduction business. They're geniuses, Bob. I mean, I can tell you straight out. When I used to go to auctions, it was like, oh my God, how can you tell if this is a reproduction or not? And the cardinal rule is if it looks too nice and you just can't believe it's there, it's probably a reproduction. But you can get burned so many times. I mean, you have to really, really pull out the reference book and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just surprised the fact that this guy actually. Well, I'm actually not surprised. I mean, Fox has probably been peddling this story for a long time.
Oh, I don't doubt it in the least.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, which I find, you know, we talk about radio, we talk about the infrastructure, and we talk about progressive media and stuff like that. And this is a little nice reminder of what happens when we don't pay attention to this. And I don't know if you know this, but recently, this week, I went to Shannon Moore's website, and it says, or radio station, Kudo, and it says, click for progressive talk. And guess who bought the station, Bob?
Fox, and there's a story behind the story.
Yeah, Fox bought the station, and they didn't have a... And Shannon was talking on the air about this a little bit, what she could manage to talk about, and she said they just didn't have... They didn't have the funds at the time to keep Kudo going.
What's interesting about Kudo, though, is who the they are.
Hmm.
Do you remember?
I'm not aware of that.
I don't know. I don't know if your foray into liberal talk goes back this far. But do you remember the old IE America radio network?
Oh yeah.
Okay, you remember who ran that?
Not off the bat, no. I was more of on the radio power type.
Okay. Well, IE America was run by the United Auto Workers. Because at some point, the United Auto Workers realized that they had better, by God, get into the battle and start combating some of the filth that was flowing out of, you know, Hannity. And, of course, Limbaugh was king. I don't even know that Hannity was on the air on radio yet. But Limbaugh was enough. And so there were great, great talents at IE America. Tom Hartman, Malloy, Peter Werbe. Were all there, and some other syndicated guys and stuff. They did really, really good work. They built a first-class studio in Detroit, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then a guy named Ron Gettelfinger, again, if I recall correctly, was elected president of the UAW on the promise that if he was elected president of the UAW, he would, by God, shut that radio thing down. Okay? And he did. And Malloy went away for a while. Malloy went away until Air America came along, and it was a long, long dry spell. God knows, for the Truth Seekers it was, and probably for Mike as well. Now, the reason I say all that as preface is Kudo was owned by the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And they bailed out on Kudo and sold it to Fox. And once again, because, well, there's a subtext here. And it goes to the ongoing conversation we have about why we can't build liberal media.
Right.
And that subtext is that And I've said it before, but it bears saying again.
Mm-hmm.
When right-wingers like Rupert Murdoch or Reverend Moon or any of these right-wing outfits that fund this filth, whether it's World Nut Daily or any of the other garbage dispensers, they fund these things and they don't care how much money they lose because they understand that at the end of the day, no matter how much money they lose, A, it gets written off and lowers their taxes. B, no matter how much money they lose, they win because the money comes back to them by virtue of constantly reinforcing their base with the Star Trek earworms. On the other hand, our side enters into these kinds of things, and they say, well, these things better make us some money, or we're going to get out.
Right.
They're not even content to break even.
Yeah, that is a problem.
They want this stuff to make money.
Mm.
But the thing is, radio stations don't make money.
Mm.
Anybody who can't run a radio station to where it will break even probably is in the wrong business, but it will not make money. The money is made by the highfaluters who do the syndication. But radio stations don't make money. And so consequently, the IBEW bailed the hell out on Kudo. And as a matter of fact, our buddy Marty nominated the IBEW as a moron for Moran Monday. They completely abandoned the field of conflict. So that's why that happened. Now, it's my understanding Shannon's been told, you know, nothing's different. I won't speak for her. I'm just, you know, what I've read. Everything's going to be the same. The audience is the same. The frequency changed. That's it. But you know what? In the long run, Fox don't tolerate people who don't hew the party line.
I was like, uh-oh, this is bad.
So I hope the hell she gets seriously syndicated seriously soon.
Yeah, it would be nice. I hear good news for Sam Cedar. I hear he's joining the cast to Ring of Fire. It's not been announced yet, though.
Well, he would be an excellent replacement for David Bender.
Yeah.
Because David Bender decided to take a powder on it all. I read his farewell notice saying, you know, I've been at this for 5 or 6 years, and it's been an honor and a privilege, but I've got to go and rediscover myself. And I'm not going to criticize anybody who does that, because the burnout factor here is profound. Found.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, when it's time to go, my advice is go. Think about it for a minute, but then go.
Yeah, but well, you know, doggone it. Let me get my phone over here. No, I didn't get the call. Oh well, good luck, Sam.
Well, you know.
But then again, you know, the fact that we're on the internet and the fact that I let people use fun words probably takes me out of the running for much of anything. Because, well, listen to that. He just said shit on the air. He's liable to say it on our terrestrial radio, and we'll be in trouble with the FCC. You know?
Mm. And you know, it's interesting what's happening. There's some good signs about, but the funding is just crazy. I mean, it's driving. I mean, Sam Cedar is really racing against it, and he has some. I mean. He's doing what he can, but he's going back to the New York high rises, and you know how much that is, and you know how that is, getting everybody together and being in that type of environment.
Oh, look, I mean, I'm running this on a we are running this on an absolute shoestring, and I'm if I had a house payment,
right?
If I had any more expenses than we already have. I couldn't do this. I would be standing about 15 miles away, next to a buggy, with a little blue vest on, saying, "Welcome to Walmart." That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah.
I'd have one of those stupid headsets on, and I'd be hustling AOL or credit cards or something at a telemarketing firm. I mean, I know what the realities are. We are, but look, it snowed like hell here yesterday, and it's not even winter yet.
You know,
the furnace is gone.
Yeah.
The roof is going.
Wow.
I've got floors that are falling out. The basement is flooded.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here. You know what? If you're not absolutely determined like hell to do this, you can't. You can't. And you know what? If the roof goes, guess what? The horn goes. So I understand the thin freaking razor's edge that everybody doing this is doing this on, David. I understand.
Do I dare ask how much a roof goes these days?
Oh, the roof would probably go for about $4,000.
$4,000?
Yeah, the furnace goes for about $10,000.
Hmm.
The floor work is probably another $3,000. You know, but you know what? It might as well be 4 million as 14,000, because I'm as far away from one as I am from the other. And this is not the septic tank pitch. This is not that.
Well, you know, at least
we're warm here. I've got propane space heaters and propane bottles, and nobody's freezing, and it's gotten awfully goddamn cold. We're all okay.
Wow. At least these disasters come sporadically and not.
No, these have just been rolling up over the years, frankly.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, when I say, for instance, you know, that when we don't meet our fundraising goal for the month, it comes out of and Agnes's hide. That's where we make up the shortfalls. It's a reality. But you know what? There's a good side to this.
Yeah.
We're heating this house on portable propane heaters. And you know what that means?
What?
That means there's another chunk of mountain that my family isn't blowing up, David. That's a little bit more of our world that we are not contributing to its destruction. So, you know, the universe operates in strange and mysterious ways.
Yes, it does. And before I go, I just want to mention to the Horn listeners who haven't called before and who may want to call, and you're a bit nervous or anything to that effect, I just want to say this. You never know who's listening, and you never know who you could help out or inspire at that time. And someone may just be waiting for you. And finally, being able to connect and relate on your level to their level. And I think that's important. So if there are any listeners out there, you should keep that in mind.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'd say our first-time callers have more fun here than anywhere else.
I agree with completely.
David, take care. Oh, by the way, you got to run over to Salon today. There was an incredibly snarky review of Tron.
See, you had to bring that up. I saw the Huffington Post byline. And I was like, oh, my God, what are you guys doing to me? Now you make me think, should I get the DVD? But it's the 3D thing, Bob. It's dragging me in. The 3D.
Oh, but see, the Salon review said that the 3D is murky.
Oh, God. See, why did you do that?
Well, how many things have you done to me? Come on.
I know exactly. But, you know, I think that was the kicker. I'm not going to go see Tron, though.
No. See, I would. I don't think it'll be right. It'll be our Kincaid family trip to the movies. But, Tron is just like Avatar. It's a see it on the big screen or don't see it at all movie.
Yeah, but, you know, it's one of those things where I have to take some family members, and then the pressure's on me because it better be a good movie in that sense.
Oh, see, my dad was terrible that way. I'd talk him into going to a movie with me every now and then, and we'd come out of the movie, and he'd say, I'm going to cry all the way home. I want my money.
Yeah, see what I mean?
No, I do. I do completely.
I'm
now, you know, I can
rolling this over.
I can wait till the DVD release for True Grit. I've seen big screen pictures of mountains and horses enough.
Right.
But Tron, no, they'll sneak away from here and catch an afternoon cheapie.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Well, Bob, as always, it's good to talk to you. And people, if you're new listeners, I invite you and the rest of the Horn community invites you to call in.
Thanks a million, David.
All right, later.
Later. Bye now. And let's see if you're still here. No, you're not. Okay. This coming in from Sandra, who just viewed the racist soap piece. Just because Oprah is into it don't mean shit. The soaps are disgusting and insulting. And I gotta add that again, he didn't buy a box of soaps from old Aunt Essie's attic, and that's all he's got. He's sold out now. But it is a replica manufacturer. Otherwise, the ink would probably be gone on the wrappers. Colored kids soap cakes with colored kids and cake spelled with K. Jesus! You know? But, you know, Spike Lee buys it, but Spike Lee didn't. I love the little nerves that I touch here along the way. David in South Carolina says, we're also heating with Big Buddy propane heaters and staying warm, too. They work. And, you know, the nice thing is compared to electric heat is it's a little bit more moist so you don't dry out quite so bad. But, Lord, aren't we going through the propane bottles? Whew. I'm going to have to get one of those adapter hoses to a 20-pound propane tank and sit it out on the porch. But, no, they work really, really well. That's true. That's true, David, in Tennessee. The Neutron looks murky because the original looked murky. You do remember that correctly regarding the original Tron. And the cool thing is I haven't seen it, but as I was reading the review, I noticed the reference to the Jeff Bridges character has aged inside, you know, inside the cyber universe, and he lives in a cave somewhere. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, wait a minute. Did they hijack Heart of Darkness for this? Colonel Kurtz in the wilds, in the cave, the horror. And that's enough to make me want to go and see if my theory holds up. Sometimes I hate me, but you know how that goes. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up?
I'm selling propane and propane accessories.
Thank you, Mr. Hank Hill. No. If you're Hank Hill, it's propane.
Propane, sorry. Oh my.
Accent grave over the pain.
Propane and propane accessories.
Mm-hmm.
God. Yeah, I was just thinking about your predicament as you've laid it out. How about this? How about to get the Horn family involved? And this is about the only way I can think of doing this, is for you to have a virtual bake sale.
Well, I did not intend to get the Horn family involved. That was a discussion of how hard it is to just stay in this damn business because people outside of folks like the Horn family don't pony up and support this kind of stuff the way they ought to. They've got that, we talked about it maybe a few days ago. They've got this attitude of why buy the cow when you're getting the milk for free? And it's a blighted and benighted attitude because what we're not talking about getting the milk for free. We're talking about keeping the cow from starving to effing death.
Exactly. I mean, this is like, you know, Bob Perry talks about this often.
Oh, he talks about it with real authority because, God, he's been running Consortium News since Jesus was a baby, the time of year being what it is.
Yeah.
And he knows what it means to struggle to survive.
Exactly. And you know how he ended up there. I mean, Bob Perry is not some schmuck off the street.
No, this is a guy who broke Iran-Contra.
Exactly. And that is exactly why he is where he is. All the respectable publications wouldn't have a person like that around.
Oh, no. And when Bob Perry broke Iran-Contra, the for-profit media stayed away in droves.
Absolutely. I mean... All right, movie reference, obscure movie.
We've been loaded with them.
3 Days of the Condor.
Mm-hmm.
The movie. Do you remember how it ends? The very ending of it.
No.
Where Bob Redford is sitting there, and you know they're standing out. He's standing outside the New York Times building, they show you that, Chiron. And he says, too late. I've given it to them. And Bonacito looks at him and says, what if they don't publish it? And you see this look of abject horror creep over Redford's face, and he starts running down the street. And that's how it ends.
And isn't that, okay, one good movie reference deserves another. Isn't that essentially the same thing as the ending of the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, where the Ark is warehoused far, far away in some forgotten government warehouse, and they put it on a shelf, and the last thing you see is the letters on the box beginning to burn from having the Ark inside of it?
Uh-huh. I mean, oh, God. You know, as we were saying last night, the collapse is coming, which upsets me. You know, not that I'm having that great a time, it's just that it doesn't have to be this way, but it is going to be this way. if you know what I mean.
Right. Or in another way, it doesn't have to be this way, but it has to be this way?
Yeah. I mean, we could still, it would take some doing, but we could still pull out of this and level the plane off. And what we're fighting is a bunch of maniacs who are at the joystick, diving straight into the ground because it goes faster this way. Faster to where is the question? You know, I signed on for New York, not a big crater out here somewhere. You know,
all true, too true.
I don't give a crap how fast you're going. I mean, yeah. If I get there eventually, I'm happy. The way you guys are driving, we're all going to be dead. That's the annoying part. There are people out here like Robert Reich, like Dean Baker, like Jesus Christ. What's his name? From Princeton.
Don't do that to me.
I'm looking at his face. I just, the name is, eludes me. The award winner. Good God. Krugman.
Yes. Or somebody else that's been speaking out loud and proud is David K. Johnston.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are people who were insiders, for God's sakes. Why don't you listen to them?
Ray McGovern?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my understanding, by the way, that our buddy Matt Osborne was in D.C. at the protest today.
All right.
I will be very curious to see what kind of reporting he has to come back with.
Me three. Especially as much as it snowed like hell.
But, you know, I saw some early photos from Code Pink, and it looked like there was an amazing mass of people.
Good.
But you know what? You know what thrilled me to pieces?
Huh?
I don't know that there's a direct connection, but I suspect somewhere along the way there's probably at least a little one. They used exactly the same model as Appalachia Rising did.
All right.
So, you know, that really is inspiring.
I mean, the thing is, the powers that be, the for-profit media, are all out here telling us, no, it doesn't help. So what? Ha ha, you had a protest, ha ha. It doesn't matter. It matters, Bob. It frickin' matters. It matters to get your butt out on the line. Stand up for Jesus Christ's sake. I mean, jeez. When I was facing off with Nixon's Nazis in D.C., you had to stand your ground at some point. You know, especially since you're not doing anything wrong, you're not doing anything illegal. And you have to stand your ground. You know you're going to get the crap knocked out of you, too. You know it's coming, but you got to stand there. Whatever happened to that? We used to know how to do that.
I have no answer.
I remember under the first Bush when Barbara, who had taken the Library of Congress under her wing, cold, crude vulture that she is, she was going to really cut the reading room hours, like maybe, maybe half of what it is now. I mean, that is why people come to the Library of Congress, because it is open until 10 o'clock at night. Because for a lot of people, this is the only way you have access to these books, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
If you're going through school, this is where you can read those books without having to buy them all. And a lot of people don't have money. You know, but anyway, they were going to have the hours. They were going to get rid of about half of what was in the Library of Congress, anything she found objectionable.
Jesus.
And we kind of went off on Jag about that one. You know, we actually had real sit-down protests. We all came in, filed in right before 5 o'clock, filled up the entire Library of Congress reading room, sat our butts down, and refused to leave at 5 o'clock. You want me to leave, you're going to have to pick me up and carry me. Just hang going. And this went on day after day, and people showed up. The kinds of people you're talking about, I was sitting next to a doctor from India who was doing a research project. On the other side, there was a gentleman in his 60s, I believe, who was a professor of history. These are the kinds of people that you were sitting next to. And trust me, the D.C. Police Department was not very kind with us. It was okay as long as the cameras were on you. As soon as they got you around the corner to the paddy wagons, you kind of fell down 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times.
Whoopsie.
Yeah.
Well, that's in a way that's reminiscent of what's being told about Bradley Manning. And I mean no disrespect in this, but in all of the considerable coverage of Julian Assange, we have forgotten that the guy who made Julian Assange is sitting in a brig in what, Quantico?
I believe so.
That he is in solitary confinement on a suicide watch, even though he shows no sign of suicidal ideation.
No.
That he has been denied even sheets, a pillow, and pillowcases.
Yes.
That he sits, he eats his meals, and that's the end of it. There are organizations out there, Cossack, that say that what Bradley Manning is being subjected to is nothing short of what many nations define as actual torture.
Correct. Well, he also has lights on 24/7. They do not dim the lights at all.
And now they're pressuring him to try to drop the dime on Assange and say that they actively work together so that Eric Holder's Justice Department can gin up some sort of phony baloney, dummied up, ginned up, rubed up, faked up, frauded up conspiracy charge.
Correct.
On information that's not even secret.
No.
On information that was all stamped no foreign, that and a designation that the lowliest the toilet swabbing private has.
Correct. And the problem is, Bob, they're fulminating not because of blood on anybody's hands, as they keep on trying to trot out. It's not because any of these revelations have endangered real people. What happened was the dirty laundry just got aired.
No, but what he has endangered is corporations.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you caught this today or not, Cossack, but dear old BP has been caught up in the WikiLeaks phenomenon.
Yeah.
Apparently,
why is it that nobody knew this?
Apparently, BP had a blowout similar to the rig in the Gulf. 18 months before the Deepwater Horizon blowout, the thing is, they had this blowout in Azerbaijan.
Correct.
Here's the text. Striking resemblances between BP's Gulf of Mexico disaster and a little reported giant gas leak in Azerbaijan experienced by the UK by BP 18 months beforehand have emerged leaked from U.S. embassy cables. The cables reveal that some of BP's partners in the gas field were upset that the company was so secretive about the incident that it even allegedly withheld information from them. They also say that BP was lucky that it was able to evacuate its 212 workers safely after the incident, which resulted in two fields being shut down and output being cut by at least 500,000 barrels a day, with production disrupted for months. Other cables leaked claim that the president of Azerbaijan accused BP of stealing $10 billion of oil from his country and using mild blackmail to secure the rights to develop vast gas reserves in the Caspian Sea region. Well, surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Hooey hoot. Yeah, Bradley Manning, I'm informed by David in Tennessee, is also being involuntarily given antidepressants to, quote, prevent emotional damage from solitary.
Ah, yes.
Better living through chemistry.
God.
Cossack, it is crazy-making, isn't it?
Insanity. Insanity. I mean, like I said, these idiots are driving us into a wall. People like you and me are trying, for a variety of reasons, not to run straight smack dab into the wall. At least turn a little bit, you know?
Well, I couldn't afford to do it because the wall would give way.
I mean, this is insane. This is insane. You know, the only people that are constantly anything semi-intelligent are the ones that are being shouted down. It's insane.
It is that.
You know, we turn our backs on Bernie Sanders. Nobody even much except for on the internet. None of the for-profit media really paid any real attention to it except to laugh at him. Here he is addressing an empty chamber. God. You people wouldn't know the right thing if it came up and kicked you in the shins.
Nope.
Just don't get it. Yeah.
You know, I just got sent, we were talking about the protest in D.C. I just got sent a photograph by our good friend Patty out in North Dakota of a soldier standing there in full dress uniform. And it's just funny how my mind works. The name badge on the uniform reads CHOATE, C-H-O-A-T-E. And I can't help looking at that photograph and wondering if that's kinfolks. Because that was the maiden name of my great-grandmother. You never know. We do get around.
True.
But, Cossack, thank you for everything you've brought to the table tonight. A lot of stuff to discuss there. A horn bake sale would be fun, but, you know, I don't think this... The Horn family did the septic system, and that's plenty. This is a problem I have to figure out a way to solve on my own.
Thought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know where our hearts are, so.
Oh, I know. I do. You take care, Cossack, and say, well, you're in Florida. It's not going to get that cold, is it?
Nah, it's 60 degrees right now.
No, oh, shut up. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Bye now. Yeah, you'd stay warm. Hey, look, you can freeze to death in 60-degree water. Darn right. Hey, welcome to the program. Okie dokie. You'll have that, I guess. How do we want to wind it up tonight? Let's see. Well, we did the soap story. You've heard the song. Hey. Everybody's favorite libertarian. Right? We just love Ron Paul. Right? You know that there is an absolute the hissy being thrown in the Congress right now over the omnibus spending bill. This morning, chinless Mitch McConnell went to the floor of the Senate to, you know, and as usual, he brings in a big stack of Xerox papers that have oh, I don't know, 2,000 pages of tic-tac-toe and Hangman on them, but who's looking? And he said, you know, the problem with this bill is that it costs too much. And it's too big, and I can't read. You know, the usual crap. And there's only one problem. The bill is the omnibus spending bill that would continue the government through September the 30th comes in at $1.1 trillion, and that is a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but guess what? $1.1 trillion is exactly the amount of money that Mitch McConnell himself said the bill had to be. Really, no kidding. $1.1 trillion if the Republicans would hold their breath until they turned blue. But now they're going to hold their breath until they turn blue again. Huh? What? No, really. I guess this is, but we're not surprised. Because right-wingers, Mitch McConnell, that law ilk, they're, what's the word in English I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, dirty goddamn liars. Yeah. About 10 minutes before the hour, and no, wrapping up the program tonight, I got a letter from our blogger, Texas Betsy. And this deserves reading. One of the reasons that you will very seldom hear guests on this program is because there is a wealth of information to be had from Americans who are not every day treated as if they are experts, but in managing to continue to survive in this culture, this benighted land, they are indeed experts. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, is one of those experts. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, is a teacher, and a fine one, as you will find out. Listen up. This is the reality. When we talk about budget cuts and we talk about right-wingers saying they want to get the government small enough to drown it in a bathtub, this is what that means. This is part of what it means when a county or a municipality can't cut its grass anymore, can't empty the garbage in a city park anymore, can't salt the roads, can't scrape the snow off the roads. Well, there are much higher prices to be paid as well. And Betsy has here a chronicle of exactly that. I got a letter from her earlier today. She said, I'm now listening to last night's third hour. I was sent back to the classroom a few years ago with the idea that half of my professional responsibilities with the new immigrant center could be handled by a $10 an hour clerk. It is, after all, Texas. Except that they never hired the clerk. So now, no one talks with the new families or coordinates among the three new immigrant high schools or between the high schools and the refugee organizations. Result? More new immigrants and refugees either dropping out in frustration or being enrolled in ninth grade at age 18 with no counseling about the length of time it will take to finish high school. No one at all is addressing the needs of the students with interrupted formal education, the kids with five or more years of formal education missing somewhere in their history. These are the students I taught in small groups for 8 years. Instead of learning survival English, subtraction, multiplication, money skills, or how to read a bus schedule, or fill out a job application, these students now sit in Algebra 1 and an English as a second language class that teaches genres and literary terms before students can even understand directions from the classroom to the library. Somehow I get a sense that you probably need to know A, E, I, O, and U before you really start trying to get a handle on the postmodern, postprandial, yada, yada, yada. That's me. Betsy continues, and instead of a job that I was great at, nominated for English as a Second Language Educator of the Year statewide in 2006, and Texas is a big place, and placed in the top five, I'm teaching Spanish 1 in two different buildings, whole class instruction to students with little or no interest in learning Spanish, teaching from a wheelchair, and taxing my body far more than I ever did in my previous positions. I share a math classroom on Monday, Wednesday, Friday afternoons, and an English classroom Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings. I have no posters, no connections with my colleagues, no curriculum to follow, and I print in a different building from either of the ones I teach in and make copies in a fourth building. We have no computers in the classroom other than my laptop, and the student computer labs do not have projectors of any kind, which means they can be used for student projects that are pre-printed on paper, but not for actual instruction. One of the labs doesn't even have a board. One of these days, they'll be able to replace me with a stapler and a tape recorder. And the Repiglicans will rejoice because they've cut costs. I hope I'm not giving away too much when I mention that Betsy is actually in a civilized part of Texas. Betsy's in Austin. This ain't supposed to be happening in Austin, but it is. And if it's happening in Austin, God only knows what's happening in Terlingua or Dimebox. Or anywhere else all over this poor, aching country. Here's a hint. Giving $801 billion that we have to put on our credit card to the richest people in the country who don't give a rat's ass about what happens in Betsy's school, ain't going to make nothing better. My, didn't we end on a cheerful note? So that's the program for tonight. Thank you very much, all of you who joined in. And let me announce some very, very good news. We did it. No, we didn't do it. It wasn't me and my little hammer. You did it. It's December the 16th, and we are actually over the hump. We are halfway to raising the $2,500 that we try to raise every month. And isn't that amazing? That means I can send some money to Ben Birch to defray the costs of the stream at the Horn Stream, the podcast, everything that Ben does. If we continue to make our way through the December fundraising goal. Thanks to all of you. There is liberal media. Thanks to you. And almost you alone. Thanks also go out for years of continued support from Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Between you and them, Without either of you, there would be no Horn. Amazing what we can do together, isn't it? Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, my head writer David in Tennessee, Reverbo, Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com, John Fox, wow, what a musician he is. I usually say webmaster, web designer. No, John Fox is an artist. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.